Here's how we'll start off. Parshas Shlach Lecha Anoshim. One of the strangest things that you have in a parsha like this is the presentation of a yud to Yoshua. Yoshua's name, Hoshea ben Nun, ends up getting that extra yud so that it becomes there. Yonas ben Uziel translates by this pasuk. It says, Kad Chama Anvisanuse. When Moshe Rabbeinu saw the anivus, the humility of Yoshua ben Nun, he decided that he needed something extra. He needed a yud that would be extra. He needed something a little bit more. So the Likud Sfarim all say the exact same vort. It's one after the other. You see all of this. This is the famous vort. The Mabit in Shara Yisodos, Perk Nun Hei, says the following. It's the Mabit. He says that by Tchias HaMeisim, the people that are going to have Tchias HaMeisim, the people that are going to be brought back, are going to be brought back in the Seder of the Aleph Beis. Meaning, if your name is Avraham, you're going to be one of the first people being brought back. Then will come somebody with a Beis, then somebody with a Gimel, then somebody with a Dalet, but it's going to start from an Aleph and go all the way through from Aleph to Tav. The only people who don't go in that order of Aleph through Tav are those people, not Yuds, it's going to be those people who are a Nuvim. If you're an Unuv, then you don't go by your name. Rather, you go by how big of an Unuv you are, then you get brought up before everybody who has a name. So the question is, by Yoshua, you'd think that Moshe Rabbeinu would worry. He'd switched his name from Hoshea, with a hey, to Yoshua with a yud, which means he's going to delay his Tchias HaMeisim, Lasid Lavo. How could you do that to Yoshua, to delay what he's going to have, Lasid Lavo? How could he have done that to a person? And the answer is, because once Moshe Rabbeinu saw he was an Unuv, and that he was humble, so it wouldn't matter what order his names would go. It wouldn't matter that he was a hey or a yud or anything. Then he was able to add it on, and it wasn't going to make a difference. Okay, I hear that. What in the world is going on with the Anivus? Like, that's one thing altogether. But what in the world does the Anivus have anything to do with anything? So here's the deal. Moshe Rabbeinu knew that there were four Gedolim greater than Yoshua. Yoshua was the fifth greatest of those that were going in the Meraglim. He was the fifth mentioned over here. Before him was Shamua ben Zakur, Shafet ben Chori, Kaleb ben Yefuna, and Yigal ben Yosef. Then came Hoshea ben Nun. Which means he was the fifth greatest out of all those people that were there. Somebody is the fifth greatest. I mean, that's not so much. What Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid of is that since there were Gedolim in front of him, Yoshua was such a big unuv, what was going to happen is Yoshua was going to give in to anything, any of their whims. Whatever they wanted to do, whatever they were going to say, he was going to go at himself. Says Rav Shor. Rav Shor says somebody can fool himself entirely. Can fool himself entirely his entire life. And he can think to himself and feel so low that he's the biggest son of all time, but it's not true. That's not the avoda that a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants you to do. That's not supposed to be the avoda of Hashem. What you start thinking to yourself is that your avoda is not chashuv at all. What difference does it make if I daven? What difference does it make if I learn? What difference does it make if I do anything? Because, yeah, listen, it's not worth anything anyway. What I'm doing is not the right thing. What I'm doing is not in the right way. So what difference does it make to me? Because of that, you stop doing everything. It's good to have gaiva once in a while. It's good to think to yourself that your service actually is worth something. You're not just another schmo off the street. Because otherwise, you're falling in prey to the Yetzer Hara. You're allowing your Yetzer Hara to rule over you. And you're stopping him from doing everything that you could possibly need. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a certain name that represents his greatness in this world is Yud Hei Vav Hei. Yud Hei is supposed to be the ultimate of what God can do in this world. The Vav Hei is his nature, the natural aspect of God that he shows in this world. That's Kiyad Al Kes Ka. The hand of a Malik is on the throne of God, that they're holding back the Yud Hei from joining together with the Vav Hei, and thus we don't have the full shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. We only have part of the shame. We have the Vav Hei of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world, but we don't have the full shame. We don't have everything that we could possibly get. Bring back Yud Hey into the world. If you bring back Yud Hey for yourself, that means you have Gaiva. And it happens to be that Gaiva, Gimel Aleph Vav Hey, is the same gematria as Yud Hey. What you're doing when you bring back that shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu within you is you're bringing back that Gaiva into the world that people need to be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu correctly, to knock down their Yetzer Hara, to throw out all the problems that they have within their Yetzer Hara, and to say to themselves that they're mamish, that they are worth something. They are worth something in this world, that it's not just about the garbage and about everything else. They're worth something in this world. That's the Yud Hey that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted Yoshua to have. Before it was just Hoshea. Before it was just Hey Vav Shin Ayin. Now it becomes Yud Hey Vav Shin Ayin. Now that you have the Yud Hey here, now that you have that, he has the gaiva to be able to stand up to people and say to the Meraglim, you're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. But even then, you never see Yoshua mentioned. Yeshua always plays secondary to Kalev. He still stood behind Kalev. He still was that Anav, even with the Gaiva that Moshe Rabbeinu gave him, even with that Yud-Heh, he still stood behind Kalev. Who knows what would happen if Kalev would not have been Mishtateach al Kibra Avosav, if he wouldn't have gone to Maros HaMachpelah, if he wouldn't have davened to the Avos to help him out to save him from the Atzmas Meraglim. Who knows if Yeshua, yes, 100%, and Yah Yosheich, that was the extra Yud. But who knows if Kalev wouldn't have gone, who knows what Yeshua would have done? Would Yeshua have had the strength to go on his own against all the Meraglim? Or did he only do it because Kalev started and therefore Yeshua went with? Maybe that's the reason why at the very end, when Kalev is rewarded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it only says that Kalev gets something, that Kalev is going to be rewarded. But it doesn't say anything about Yeshua because Yeshua was a tag along. Yeshua didn't get an extra little part of the Meraglim. He didn't get the extra land from the Meraglim. It was only Kalev because Yeshua was a tag along. And if nobody else would have done it, Yeshua might not have done it himself. He had a little bit of Gaiva, but not enough Gaiva. You know, the famous line in Sota is an eighth of Gaiva. You're supposed to have an eighth of an eighth of Gaiva. That is the Shem Yud-Heh. Why? Pure Kedusha. And the highest level that a person can get to is the level of a mikvah. A mikvah contains 960 lugin of water. 960 lugin of mayim. Shema Yisrael, the words Shema and Yisrael are the gematria of altogether 960 together. So you've got 960 from the pure Kedusha, 960 from Shema Yisrael. That's the highest level a person can get to. But you're supposed to have an eighth of Gaiva. An eighth of 960 is? Come on. 960 divided by 8. 120. An eighth of 120 is? 15. That 15 is the Yud-Heh of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was the Yud-Heh that was added on. The eighth of an eighth of Gaiva is that tiny little bit of a Gaiva you're supposed to have. It's just a lesson in Anivus. I saw this. Not everybody's going to be able to follow this along, but this is just a crazy story that's been told about the Stipler. The Stipler of Rav Chaim Kanievsky's father, when he passed away, so he passed away at 86. 3 years before he passed away, he was 83 years old, he was extremely weak. He was extremely weak for toward the end of his life, the last 10 years of his life. A man came from Yerushalayim to discuss with him something that was very important. He had to discuss with him that night. So it was late at night, and the stipler was he was talking with these people, but there was a long line, this huge line that went all the way out outside of his house. At 12 o'clock, the stipler's daughter came outside of the private room, and he said, listen, everybody's going to have to go. My father needs to sleep. So everybody's going to have to go. He's an older man. He's 83 years old. He's going to have to go to sleep. Please, if everybody can, just go home. So what happened? The guy didn't know what to do. He had no idea where to go or what to say or where to head. So he didn't know. He waited for a half an hour. Everybody else had left. And the daughter said to him, please, you're going to have to go now. It's time for you to go. So he said, like, listen, I have nowhere to go. I have nowhere to stay tonight. I didn't think I was going to be here this late. And there are no buses going back to Yerushalayim now. So what am I supposed to do? Where am I going to go? So she said, maybe you should go to the Letterman Shul. If anybody knows where Rav Chaim Kanievsky davens now, the Letterman Shul, there are people that learning up this late at night. Maybe you could go there. Maybe you could stay there. Maybe you could do something else. You know, go around there and go check it out over there. You should be fine. So he goes down. He goes to the Letterman Shul, and he waits for a little bit. About 45 minutes passes, and slowly but surely, he sees the stipler walk into the room completely out of breath. The stipler sits down for a while on a little bench, turns to the guy, and he says to him, were you the person who was looking for a place to sleep? The guy said, yeah, but I didn't expect the Rebbe to come anywhere. I didn't expect to stay by the Rebbe's house. I was wondering if there was an inn or somewhere else that I'd be able to go. So the stipler said to him, please, we're going to put a bed inside my house. My daughter thought erroneously that you wouldn't be able to stay. Is it erroneously or erroneously? Erroneously, that was correct. Okay, either way, she thought erroneously that it was going to be an issue of yichud if you stay in the house. So please, come inside the house. Come to the house with us. Stay with us in the house tonight. That's what the stipler said. They started walking back to the house every 3 minutes. The stipler had to stop to rest. That's how tired. He was so awful, and it was such a hard walk for him, and it was so late at night, he couldn't take it. So every 3 minutes, he stopped in this place, he stopped in that place. He kept stopping and stopping and stopping. It showed how hard it was for him to be able to get up. So he sat down inside the house, and his daughter came up to him and said, you know, the stipler's wife had passed away. There was a bachur that stayed with the stipler that slept overnight in his room, just in case the stipler needed anything at night. He refused to wake up the bachur to go get this guy. The stipler wanted to go himself. At 2 a.m., 2 o'clock in the morning, the stipler sat down with this guy, and he made him a cup of tea, and he put it down in front of him, and he sat and he talked to him about what he needed to speak about. When he finished, the stipler said, please excuse me, I have to go finish my daily learning quotas. The amount that I'm supposed to learn today. He went out. The guy asked for an alarm clock. Stifler gave him a cup for El-Natil Zidayim and a little bowl and an alarm clock, brought it to him wherever he was staying in the room that the stifler usually met with people, and the stifler stayed out in the hallway. When the guy woke up at 5:30 in the morning, the stifler was already up again with all his clothes on, and he was on his way to Minyan. That's when he was on his way to Minyan. When he had come back from Minyan at about 6:45, the stifler was already into his learning routine and started going on. The guy came in immediately. As soon as he walked in, the stifler got up and said, "Let me make you breakfast." He got up and he gave the guy cereal, Cocoa Krispies, I guess, and gave it to him, brought it down on the table, gave him everything that, you know, whatever it was, and gave him another tea, made him another tea. He said, "I'm very good at making tea." So the guy was sitting at the table and somebody walked in to speak to the stifler. The stifler said, "Please excuse me. Some people want their privacy. They want to speak to me in private and they don't want any other person around, so I can't stay in the room. I'm going to go to the other room to speak with this guy." So the guy said, "I'll get up. I don't want to bother the Rebbe. I'll go up and go into the other room. You stay here. This is your room for speaking to people." And the stifler said, "Absolutely not. I don't want to move you from your room. Please stay here. Finish your breakfast. I'm going into the other room." The other guy, when he was leaving, about a half an hour later, stifler gave him two farm as a gift on the way back. Shows you what kind of a person this cycle was. Who here would have even thought about going after the guy, let alone at the age of 83, let alone when you still had stuff to learn and you knew you were going to be up till 3 o'clock in the morning, and the fact that you were going to wake up before 5:30 the next morning. I mean, it's a ridiculous thing to think about, but that's the type of person that certain gedolim can be and certain gedolim can have. I mean, can you imagine the ability that the stifler had to be able to say this to such a person, to go around, and then not to say a thing, and then to leave the room? He's 83 years old. 83 years old. How about we can come to a level like that now with anybody, let alone somebody came to ask you a question, who's, you're doing them a favor more than anybody else. Here's the famous board from the Netzuta Shimshon. At the end of Rishon, the end of the pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu tells them to look at the land. What is the land? Is it fat or is it thin? Is there good stuff there or is there bad stuff there? Is there a tree there? Are there trees there? Is Eov around or is Eov not around? Be strong, said Moshe Rabbeinu. And take from the fruit of the land that was the grapes that they took. And the days were the days of the ripening of the grapes. Those were the days when the grapes were ripening. So everybody asked, what do you have to say that in the pasuk for? Who cares that it happened to me in Yemei Bikuri and Oven? We realize they left on Chof Tet Sivan. They came back on Tisha B'Av. Fine, we know that. So it was Yemei Bikuri and Oven. Those were the days when the grapes came out. What's the big deal? So the answer is, Pashit, because they were taking grapes and they wanted to take the grapes when they were ripened, fully ripened. That's when they went and took them. Says in the Netzuta Shimshon an unbelievable word. He says the Satan, according to the Zohar and Parsha Shmos, Perek Yud Beis, Zohar says that the Satan is shlit over three different months: Teves, Tammuz, and Av. All three of them have fast days: Asar B'Teves, Shivasa B'Tammuz, and Tisha B'Av. But Teves, Tammuz, and Av, the Meraglim left on Chof Tes Sivan, which meant that the rove of their trip, 39 days of their 40-day trip, took place during Tammuz and during Av, which was the month that the Satan has Shlita. And that's the reason why, even though when they left, Ba'usa Shah, says Rashi, at that time when they left, Kesherim Ayu, they were kosher people, because when they left, it was in the middle of Sivan. It was Chof Tes Sivan. Then they were fine. But while they were going, that's where all of a sudden the Satan got a hold of them, and the Satan grabbed them and made them do all the bad things that they did. To say Lashon Hara about the line, to say terrible things about the line, to make everything happen, because it happened to be, as they were going on, the Satan started to rule. Where's the remez for that? How do we know? Where do we see that there's such a concept that the Satan rules during this time? The Hayamim Yemei Bikurei Anavim. Says in the Netzuta Shimshon, Rishon Shem Astropolia. Bikurei means the ones first, the letters in front of the word Anavim. The letter before an ayin is a samach. Before a nun is a mem. Before a vez is an aleph. Before a mem is a lamed. That's Sam Kel. You shouldn't say the full name. Samach Mal Mem Aleph Lamed. The name of the Sultan in Shemayim, his name as a Malach, it's a Sultan, it's the Yitzhahar, it's the Malach Amavet. His name in Shemayim as a Malach is Sam Kel, the poison of God, so to speak. The poison of God. And the letters before Anavim, the letters before that refer to Sam Kel, and that's what the reference is, that these were the days of Sam Kel. Here's the problem. The way we have Anavim written in the Torah, there's a Yud in there. It's Ayin Nun Vez Yud Mem. So what do you do with that? It's an extra Yud. See, the whole remez is off. It's Sam Atel. There's a test in there. So what are you supposed to do with that? How do you understand this word? And what was the institution thinking if the word didn't have it inside there? So the Arizal answers a very similar kach. He's not answering the Nitzitzit Shimshon. Nitzitzit Shimshon lived after the Arizal, about 80 years after the Arizal. But the Arizal answers this shaila in a different way. The Arizal says there are times where you'll see in the Torah ksiv and a kri, where the Torah writes something and it reads a different way. Where it's written as one way and we read it a different way. There are times where there's machlokis in exactly what the Torah says in a given situation, in certain given situations. Says the Arizal, the pshat behind why the Torah has is because there's a Torah shomala that they're learning in yeshiva shomala and a Torah down here on earth that's yeshiva shomata. Our Torah has a problem that we can't have the mekatrigim there. The accusers come along and they say, don't give those secrets to Bnei Yisrael. And instead of having it straightforward, instead of having what we need to know and how it said, it's Ramazim. There's these hints everywhere. It has to be a sod, it has to be a secret, it has to be Kabbalah, is not given to us. It has to be something that only the great people can do. It has to be secretive, that nobody really understands it or knows what's going on or whatever it is. But the Torah in Shemayim is very direct and very clear. I don't know what it says or how it says it, but the Torah Shomayla is something that doesn't have any kitrigin, because obviously the Sultan doesn't argue on anything that's written in the Torah in Shemayim, and there's no problems up there. So even though the Torah and Shemayim can have a remez that the Satan rules during these months, and it can be Maramis to be Kurei Anavim, and have the word Ayin Nun Vez Mem in Shemayim, down here on earth, the Satan doesn't want that known. So he specifically adds in a Yud into the word to not be Maramis to his part, to make you think that the Meraglim did it on their own, and that nobody else had a part in it. The Satan didn't do anything to get involved. So that's Sisrei Torah. I can't exactly answer what that means, and I can't exactly answer what that's trying to say, but that's one answer that's given from the Nitzitzit Shimshon. Rav Wolfson takes it to task. This is an awesome answer. And he says, there's a great word that you can learn out from this that applies to everything else, just a proper lesson for us to be able to take from it, and to be able to say, oh, here's where we can go. He says, the months of Tammuz and Av are impossible. I mean, everybody knows this. The summer is the hardest time to learn. You're distracted because all you're thinking of is baseball or basketball outside. And if you're a high school kid in Skokie right now, soccer for some reason. That's what you're thinking of. You're sitting there and you're saying to yourself, I just want to go outside. I just want to run out. If there's a beach going outside, you want to go to the beach. This is a time where the women are now forgetting to put on clothing. It's a hard thing to remember in the morning. In the winter, they have to. But now, they just forget. It happens. This is the time where the billboards come out. Because even though there's always the billboards, those mushchasim put up the billboards wherever they want at any time for L.A. tan, which is whenever you see anything that's close to that, you immediately know that either you got to gouge your eyes out, or it's I don't think there's much of another choice. Gouge your eyes out, or anything else that's out there. Now is the time where they have the things for bathing suits. You can't really walk into Target. All the different magazines have bodies of those people who go to the beach, and all these different things, where all of a sudden, it's bringing out all those different problems. They're all there. It's the most impossible time to have a Tahor mind, and it's the most impossible time to be able to keep yourself in the Gemara, to be able to keep yourself down and understand. It's always break. It's always break during the summer. This is always the time where we have this idea, and it's only during the months where the Satan rules, where Tammuz and Av come around, where it's Tammuz and Av where we just can't do it, we can't sit there and learn. But it's the avoda that we have during these months are so much greater. If you work on it, if you work hard enough, the avoda that you have during these months can be the greatest avoda of all time. If you work hard enough, you can turn Tammuz and Av into the greatest months of the entire year, into the most kedusha, the greatest kedusha that a person can possibly have. What's pshat? What does that mean? That means you have to use it for good. Turn it around and turn it into something good. What happens to Shivasa B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, La'asid Lavo? They turn into Sasun V'Simcha. They become holidays. The months that belong to the Sultan, those months become the holiest months that we possibly have. They become a moed. A moed for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We may lose Pesach and Sukkot and Shavuot. Those holidays may not exist. We all have Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. Those are the 2 months that we're going to have. It's the day that Mashiach can be born. When we're down in the dumps and the worst things are there and there's nothing else going on, that's when Mashiach is born. That's when Mashiach comes into play. That's the idea behind how a person can grow during that time. So Moshe knew that. When Bnei Yisrael said, we want Meraglim, he sat there and he looked at his watch and he said, oh man, it's right before Tammuz and Av. What are we going to do? If they go during Thomas Aleph, he knew that there was a power of the Satan during that time. He realized there was going to be an issue. How am I going to be able to get around it? What am I going to be able to do? So he told them, "Bischazaktem, be strong. Ulakachtem mipri aretz, and eat from the fruit of the ground, so you can become kadosh. Because eating from the fruit of Eretz Yisrael makes you into a kadosh person. Eat from the food. Eat from those fruits that you have in Eretz Yisrael. Gain in holiness. Grow in holiness. Go around Eretz Yisrael and have the mitzvah of walking around Dalet Amos in Eretz Yisrael, making a yeshuv, so to speak, in Eretz Yisrael. Granted, it's only going to the Ramban, but regardless, at least you get a little bit. Knock out the Satan Shlita during these months. And Moshe knew if they succeeded, there would be nothing greater. In Tisha B'Av, that would have been in the day of Moed, of Sason and Simcha, when they were walked into Eretz Yisrael on that day, the Meraglim would have come back and said, let's go in, we're ready, let's take them, now, and go in, and all of Bnei Yisrael would have crossed into Eretz Yisrael, and through the Yarden, down below, wherever it would have been, they would have gone in on that day, and that day would have been the greatest day possible. But instead, we got nothing. So what is it? Moshe Rabbeinu told them, Vayomim Yemei Bikuri Anavim. Guys, the Satan's out there. But you could be Machnis a Yud. You could take a Yud and bring in the Kedusha of Yud Kei Vav Kei. Bring in the Kedusha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name and put it into Eretz Yisrael. I know the Sam is there. But you could take the Yud and put it in. Says in the Tzitzit, he's being Marames to the letters that are Tomei in the word Anavim. He's Marames to the Samach, Mat, Mem, Aleph, Lamed, to the Satan that's there. And the Yud is in there to say that you could do so much if you go in the right way. If you learn from it and you understand what you can do, you don't realize what can happen on this day. You don't realize how much Kedusha can enter in this time. You know what it means? The whole point is to take our mirrors that we use to beautify ourselves, like Bnei Yisrael did in the Midbar, and to donate them to the Mishkan to become the Kiyor. To take our iPods that have are full of whether it's movies or music or anything else that might degrade us, I'm specifically referring to rap, but really could be anything, and only put Shiurim on that iPod. Only put Shiurim on there. Specifically from my website. You can go ahead and check it out later. I'm joking. That's there. But you go ahead and you take off the TV from a shelf and you put on Sfarim. Or you call the cable company and you say, I only want that Israeli channel that plays Shiurim. That has Shiurim. Because I'm sure there's some Israeli channel that has Shiurim on it all day long, all the way through. Is there? There is? Is there?
You can get it online.
So there you go. There you go. To have your computer only put that on and to not allow yourself to watch anything else that's on top of there. That's what it means. Now, okay, we're not there yet. We can't really do that. But that's the lesson of the Meraglim. To get yourself to the level where you can take that and turn it around and turn it into something kadosh. To be Machnis a Yud. To take me Priya Oretz. To take the Yud and to put it inside the Anavim. That it doesn't become the Satan's month anymore. It becomes a little bit more. How about taking a Sunday? Instead of having that Sunday and just having to be baseball day, official baseball day, and getting yourself prepared for baseball, then playing a doubleheader, and then getting yourself, prepare for after baseball, and getting yourself ready after baseball's all over, stretching and doing whatever you gotta do. And by the time everything's all over, it's 3:00 in the afternoon, and then you got a Hawks game. Instead of something like that, you might be able to find 2 or 3 hours in that time to be able to learn. You might be able to find some time in that whole time where you'll be able to, play baseball for 2 hours a day, but forget about the stretching. So you're going to be sore tomorrow. So learn during that instead. That's the other thing. Okay, here we go. Revolvi says the protection of a person comes, the real perfection of a person comes when a person realizes his own kochos. If you realize how good you really are and what you have within you, you can turn every bad meter within you, every meter that you have that is not a good meter, you can turn that against itself and use it for good. If you realize that you have a meter of, let's say, of always being beseder, you always have everything in order, you are a person that is meticulous in the extreme, you always have that, you have a bit of OCD, and you know that you have a mida of atzlus, of laziness. You sometimes are lazy. If you use your OCD correctly, you'll never be lazy. Because you always set yourself up to be at a certain place at a certain time, your laziness won't come in there because your OCD will knock out your laziness. If a person knows how to use those midos that he has within him in the right way, then all these good things can happen. That's what it means when we say, V'hafta is Hashem Elokecho, V'chol levavcho, V'chol nafshecho, V'chol meldecho. V'chol levavcho is two vases. Says Rashi, it's your Yetzer Hara and your Yetzer Tov. Yetzer Hara and your Yetzer Tov. What's the pshat? How can you use your Yetzer Hara for good? Because if you know what you're doing, you can make even the worst things in the world become good. For example, the example is, Chazal say that Kalev was echod bepeh, echod belev. He said one thing in his mouth with his mouth, and he meant totally other things with his heart. When he was with the Meraglim, he went around the Meraglim and he said, I can't stand this land. Yeah, I can't believe we're planning on doing this. I can't believe all these things are happening. He went around and he said, he lied to the different Meraglim and he told them, I'm on your side. And then he got up there and he said, is this the only thing that Ben Amram has done to us? Is this the only thing that Moshe Rabbeinu did to us? And everybody was silent. Let's listen to Kalev. Let's hear what he has to say. And comes along Kalev, and what does he say? He says he split the sea for us. He took us out of Mitzrayim. He destroyed the Mitzrayim. And all of a sudden everybody's like, hey, what are you doing? You're on Moshe Rabbeinu's side. He lied. He lied, Kalev did. Because if you know what you're supposed to do, then all of a sudden it becomes correct. It becomes the right thing. Where do they darshan that out from? In Perek Yud Dalet, Pasuk Chof Beis. Such an awesome verse. Perek Yud Dalet, Pasuk Chof Beis. The Pasuk says the following. The Pasuk says, here we go. Ki kol anashim aruam is kvodi. No, that is not it. And I, Chof Dalet, I'm sorry, Chof Dalet. Va'avdi Kalev Ekev Haitza Ruach Acheres Imo. My servant Kalev, because he had another spirit with him. Vayamalei Acharoi. And he, I don't know. Vayamalei Acharoi. And he filled after me. How do you translate those words? What do you do? Says Rashi, he had a Ruach Acheres. Shtei Ruchos, Achas Bepev, Achas Belev. Vayamalei Acharoi, Vayamalei is Libo Acharoi. He filled his heart after me. What's pshat? Because Kalev was the one who had a ruach acheres. He had another idea. He was achas bepev, achas belev. He used his yetzer tov to think the right things, and he used his yetzer hara to lie for a good purpose. To lie in order to get the Meraglim. To be able to make sure the Meraglim didn't kill him before he came back. And then to fight the Meraglim with their own poison. To be able to get the people to be quiet, to listen to Kalev, and for Kalev to say to them, you guys are a bunch of fools. Do you realize what Moshe Rabbeinu has done for us? You don't realize that. Says, I don't remember who says this. Libo Acharoi is the Levav. He filled his heart after me. He made it into Levav. He not only used his Yetzer Tov to help me out, he used his Yetzer Hara in a good way. And all of a sudden he was able to use Sheker in the way that it's supposed to be used, in the best way possible. Chazal say that Ruach Acheres was Chur. Chur came back, and the Nitzitz, the spark of Kedusha, that was from Chur, when Chur was killed for protesting against the Egel Azov, came back and helped out Kalev. How does that help out Kalev? Chur was killed. Kalev went up against the people, and he wasn't killed. What's pshat? Because Chur realized he had done something wrong. When the peoples came up to Chur, they said, Moshe Rabbeinu's gone, help us make a leader. Chur yelled at them and said, what's wrong with you? Guys, we're a bunch of fools. Why would you think that we need another leader? You're a bunch of fools. And Bnei Yisrael got so angry at Chur, they killed him. What did Aaron do? Aaron got up and said, listen, let's hold on a second. Let's wait. Give me all your gold. And he delayed a little bit. He acted as if he was on their side. Then he took the gold and he put it inside a pile. Then he started a fire. And without the Erev Rav, it would have taken until morning for anything to form. And by that time, Moshe Rabbeinu would have come down. Aaron wanted to be, he pretended like he was on their side. But really, he was doing it for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Chor understood that from Shemaim, that he had made a mistake. And the next time something like this would happen, he knew that the way to be metaken himself is to show the person who is in trouble, act as if you're with them. Use Sheker in the best way, and on the inside, know that you're not there, and then fight. And then fight when you're ready to fight. That's what you gotta do. So Chur was the Ruach Acheres that joined inside Kalev. The Sitra Achra, the other side of Sheker, that went inside Kalev. And Chur was metakin the chait that he originally had, to be misgalgal into Kalev, to help him be exactly what he was supposed to be. And Kalev was mamish almost killed. The people picked up stones, and the mamish wanted to stone him. They wanted to stone him. They picked up stones to be able to kill them at Perek Yudal Apostle. They picked up a stone to be able to do whatever they wanted. Vayomu Kaleida Lirgomo Sambav on him. To stone them with stones. Ukvod Hashem Nirab Olamoid Al Bekobin Ezov. Hashem would not have appeared in the Olamoid. They would have stoned Yoshua and Kalev. Yoshua and Kalev would have been dead. It was darn close. So what happened? What made Bnei Yisrael decide so badly to go against, not only to just not listen to Kalev and Yoshua, but to fight Kalev and Yoshua to the death, to kill them? For what? For speaking about Eretz Yisrael? For speaking about Eretz Yisrael?
That's why they wanted to kill him? What was the idea? What in the world could they possibly have an excuse for killing him for? So Elena Lishabach says a crazy thing. He says, here's a nutty thing about Averis and Mitzvos. What do Averis and Mitzvos do? Aside from the schar that's there in Shemayim, there's no direct schar on earth. But what do? Mitzvos and Averis close you up from your Bechira that you could have had. If you do a mitzvah, what ends up happening is your Bechira closes on something wrong that you might have thought. If you do an Avera, then even though normally you would never think to do something bad, you'd never think to do something this off. How would you think that way? Your Bechira is closed, and the Avera causes you to not make the right decision. And you decide wrongly. You make the wrong decision, and you mess it up. Here's the pshat. If a person sins, the satan blinds him. It goes in front of him and puts those little blinders on like they do by a horse and doesn't let him look the wrong way, the other way that you should be looking. Not allowing him to see what he's doing is wrong. Something that until now he knew was pashut, not this way. There's no way you could think this way. Here's what happened. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared pisom to Miriam and Aaron after this spoke Lashon Hara. Pisom, suddenly. He didn't even allow Aaron and Miriam to do tshuva. He immediately appeared to them and said, meet me at the Olam Oed. And immediately when they said, oh, we feel bad about what we did, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm not accepting that right now. Kadosh Baruch Hu is taking what an Avera is and saying, here's what it does to you. It destroys you. It destroys your mind. It doesn't allow you to make the right decisions. You can't make the right decisions. It makes you choose the wrong path. See what happened? I mean, you can see this by so many people. Isn't it pure idiocy what's going on in Eretz Yisrael? The whole idea of what their taina is, the claim of Jewish naval officers going down in a ship and just opening fire on innocent civilians, it just sounds ridiculous. You wouldn't hear that about anybody, let alone for that taina to be made by an obvious Palestinian, by a person who hates Jews, or by somebody who's a Turkish Arab who hates Jews, to be able to make such a taina, and yet that's believed. Not that believed. CNN believes it, and NBC believes it, and ABC believes it, CBS believes it, everyone believes it. Yet the Jews just came down on the ship and started opening fire. It's pure idiocy. Idiocy. Why would any nation, especially at a time when you knew that your prime minister is speaking with President Obama about the issues that are going on in Eretz Yisrael, about there, and you have pictures, obviously, and you have all the evidence, but forget about the evidence. Just the idea is stupid. But if you do an Avera, if you do something wrong, this something doesn't allow you to choose correctly. It doesn't allow you to see what's so obvious. It's so pashut, and you just can't see it. There's just nothing to see. Here's the pshat. This is what happened by the Meraglim. The report was given. The report was given over. And the people believed them. And Bnei Yisrael brought themselves to a very low level, where they had no emunah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could save them, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to be able to make sure that everything was going to happen. Very low spiritual level. Perek Yudalit Pasuk Aleph, the way the wording of the Pasuk is, Yudalit says, Vatisa Kol Eda. The whole Eda cried. Anybody know what Rashi says? Who's the Eda?
Sanhedrin.
What happened to Sanhedrin? Sanhedrin paskind a halacha here. You know what they paskind? This is Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. He says they felt this was a matzav of pikuach nefesh. All of a sudden, this is a sakana for Klal Yisrael. They knew that naturally the Jews would never be able to defeat anyone in Eretz Canaan. There's no way naturally the Jews had the firepower, the abilities to be able to fight any nation in Eretz Canaan. What did they need? They needed miracles. But if Bnei Yisrael is on such a low level, that means that what? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't with them. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't with them, then they're not going to be able to fight. So they can't enter Eretz Yisrael. Said the Sanhedrin, it's not time yet. And by pikuach nefesh, ein chokin kavod l'rav. You don't go to the master. You make a decision based on the Sanhedrin, and that's it. So they didn't go to Moshe Rabbeinu. They made a psak din lahalacha. And they told Klal Yisrael, because you guys just believed those Meraglim, forget it, we can't go to Eretz Yisrael. Batisa koledas, they cried out loud and they said, oy vey, now we can't go to Eretz Yisrael. Because you guys believe them. Now we're on a level where we don't deserve to have miracles happen to us. Forget it. We can't go in. And it's a sakana. And it's pikuach nefesh. And not only that, we can't stay in the midbar, because we can't stay here forever, so we better go back to Mitzrayim. We'll go back to Mitzrayim, we'll wait it out. And when we bring ourselves back up to another level, then we'll go back to Eretz Yisrael. And that's what we'll deserve to be able to defeat the 31 Malachim. But now, no. Tov lanu shuv Mitzrayim. That was the psak halacha made by the Sanhedrin. It's pashut that it's the wrong psak. Pashut. And they knew that. but an avera blinds you. And if you hear that and you start with that avera, you don't realize how wrong you are. You don't realize that you're making the wrong decision. You don't even realize it's a bad decision. And when Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron bowed down to the ground, they fell on their face and said, "Oy vey, how could you come up with such a psak?" They said, "Ein chokin kava b'rav." The Sanhedrin has decided. The majority has decided against Moshe and Aaron. The Rove has decided to go back to Mitzrayim. And anyone who says that we should go to Eretz Yisrael is a Mesis Meidiach, possibly somebody who's a Rodef, and he's Chayiv Misa. He's a Rodef. So when Kalev and Yeshua got up and said, Tova Aretz Me'od Me'od, the people got up with their stones and they said, "You're Chayiv Misa, because you're Rodef." That was the idea behind it. Because we're blinded from seeing the MS. And that led to Kalev and Yeshua having the audacity to argue on the Psak Beis Din. How could you argue? That caused all the problems. That's why they felt that Bnei Yisrael, that Bnei Yisrael felt that they were going to die. That's why Kadosh Baruch Hu himself had to step in to say, "Wait a second, guys, you're wrong. The Aver is blinding you. Do you realize how holy you have to be to make the right decisions? How often do you daven to make the right decisions when you get up in the morning? Get up in the morning, you daven Shacharis, stay in your Shemon Esrei, you get to Atachonin Lodam Das, Umlamin Lenosh Bino, Chanein Yitcha Deya Bino Mahaskel, Baruch HaTashem Chonin Ras. Do you ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu to help you make the right decisions? How in the world can you give Eitzah to other people if you're not begging HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give you the right Eitzah? What about you? It's just a sham that there are people giving Eitzah that are not begging HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Shemayim, asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give it, help me give Eitzah in the right way. Because if you do give Eitzah and you're not ready for it, or if you're giving the wrong Eitzah, I mean, what are you doing? And if you just did an Avera and then you make a decision, come on. You actually expect HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be with you on that decision making? They're blinded. Halavai that we should be blinded the other way around. To be the tzaddikin that only do mitzvos. So we're blinded from doing averos. That even avera that's so pashit to us to do, we're blinded from it and we can't do it. And avera that's so pashit, we would have done it 5 seconds earlier, but because we just did a mitzvah, all of a sudden. That's why we ask tzaddikim for advice. That's why we go up to tzaddikim, people that have not done averos, because their mitzvos should be able to blind them from doing anything wrong. That's the idea behind it. So here's the summary. Here's what we went into. We said we added on a yud to Yoshua to give him the gaiva that he needed to survive. And we gave a story with the stipler about anivos. It was hard times, bikuri anavim without the yud. And the sultan was in charge, but we said that it could become bikuri anavim with the yud. It become a time of holiness, a time when you can only add on kedusha if it's done correctly. We said using your yud, hey, you could use your yitzhahara for good. Kalev was able to use sheker for the right reasons, and thus Kalev was able to be such a great person. If you used it for good, you wouldn't imagine what you could do with it. And we ended with how Bnei Yisrael could think of killing Kalev and Yeshua because their averos blinded them from seeing what they were doing. They couldn't see anything, and the Sanhedrin paskined wrong. That was the idea behind it, and that's why they did it that way. The person has to remember what he has the capabilities of doing. We'll end with that. Have a good Shabbos.